I'm Celine McKay, and this is the Pure Green Podcast, episode 29. The idea of lifestyle design, this concept of being able to create the life of your dreams and be successful doing it, feels something like a modern fairy tale. We see others who've achieved it, or seem to have, and we place them on the same pedestal we might put celebrities. It just doesn't feel possible. But here's the thing. In this day and age, with so many people finding ways to create a business online, or if employed, work from home, there is actually less stopping you from creating the freedom you crave than you might think. Mostly, it's a frame of mind and simply involves getting out of your own way. Rather than look for reasons not to do it, instead, look for solutions to the things you feel are tying you down. Today, I'm so excited to bring you a guest who has done just this. He designed the life of his dreams and has been living a very blessed life on the road for the past 2.5 years with his Airstream. In his words, home is where you park it. And he has been able to experience the most inspiring places and call them home until the desire to move on strikes again. His lifestyle is just incredible. He's done this while working remotely, running his software company called Company B, and has committed to such an extent that he sold his home in Denver and doesn't see himself settling down anytime soon. He's also taken huge strides to live with as little environmental impact as possible, running his Airstream with solar panels and consuming an incredibly tiny amount of water. He runs his diesel truck on waste vegetable oil as well, a clean-burning fuel that's more readily available than you might think. Everywhere he goes, he has the opportunity to educate others about his way of life, and it's made an impact. We talk about how he did all of this and how you can do it too in this episode. And before you go thinking that you could never do this with kids, well, we talk about that too. It's all possible if you want it. And even if you don't think that life without a permanent address is for you, this episode is hugely inspiring just to listen to. His name is Brandon Peake, and readers of the magazine will recognize him from Volume 8. I've been looking forward to this interview for a long time, so let's get to it. Here's Brandon. So I wanted to just set the stage right now. So where are you this exact moment?
So right now I am in Ojai, California. I am sitting in the bar at the Ojai Rancho Inn.
Oh, nice.
Yep, yep. This is my friend. My friends own this spot. And I think I've sent you a few, you've probably seen a few things from here, from before, because I've come here a few different times. It just calls me back here, and I really enjoy it here. They allow me to have a really nice place to park and kind of have a little bit of a home base out of.
Ojai, definitely, I've heard you mention that a couple of times. So what is it, do you think, that keeps drawing you back there?
Well, I think overall I'm drawn to places that have, you know, really positive energy and are known as kind of like energy vortexes. And for whatever reason, Ojai kind of has that, you know, it's like a Sedona, or a Marfa, Texas, or something that really has this cool energy here. And a lot of people say the same thing. They were drawn here. And, I think that's really what it is between like the agriculture, the outdoor lifestyle, you know, all the spirituality that's here, and the, you know, just the good vibes.
Yeah.
Sounds so hippie, but the good vibes here are pretty strong, you know, with a bunch of like-minded individuals.
So, right. Yeah. No, it sounds beautiful. So you think that comes from the people more than the place, or is it something like a blend?
I think the people wind up being the bonus. It really is the place that has the positive energy. Why so many people over the, you know, thousands of years have been drawn to this area for whatever reason, whether it was the Native American, the Chumash Indians, or you know, anything like that. I think it's just in the water. Something's in the water here.
Something's in the water here
for sure. So.
Oh, nice. That sounds
good. Yeah, it pulls in the right people, and then it's just that much better. So, but I think the place is pulling everybody here. You know,
Oh, it sounds really, really fantastic. So how long have you been there?
Right now, I've been here 2 weeks. I just got off of a big road trip that I was on for like 7 weeks, where, including California, I went to 9 states.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a little bit more fast-paced than I usually do it, but I was traveling with my friend's photography project. And it just made sense to kind of go with the flow and be on that kind of a trip that, you know, that was good for me. It was good for them. You know, it was a great time. I'm glad I did it. But being so fast paced, I'm pretty excited to, you know, be planted for a minute and, you know, focus on my work and be able to get to some of these things that I need to, that going day to day for weeks on end doesn't really allow for sometimes.
Mm-hmm. What was it about your trip that was so, like, why did you have to cover so much ground so quickly?
So I was on this, my friend has a photography project called the Lifers Project, and he is shooting basically large format tintypes. Do you know what those are?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he was basically shooting portraits and landscapes of all these people that are very passionate about what they do. So in this case, it was professional skateboarders and people who have dedicated their life to skateboarding and also bicycles. So we were going around and doing 50 mile bike rides with these, you know, semi pro to pro people, and you know, we would have to shoot their portraits, shoot some action, get some video, and then we would have an appointment with somebody that was maybe 250 miles away the next day that we just had to get on the road to get to.
Gosh.
Yeah, so there were some things like that that were just out of all of our control, and we just had to go.
Yeah. So what is the end goal of his photography project?
The end goal is really the plates that came out of it. He is backed by Cadillac. So Cadillac sponsored him, and basically they were making video updates and getting content out of it. So that was one of the goals, was to create content about the project.
Yeah.
But then the end goal is actually telling the story of these people that have dedicated their lives to their passion through these tintype, like, wet plates in a gallery show.
Nice.
So the first gallery show was actually in L.A., back in April. So that was the first season of the season's collection.
Okay.
The second one that we just did, the second art show is in San Francisco. That's in the first week of August. And then the last season kicks off filming in the beginning of September. And that art show will be in New York City in October.
Oh, wow. Neat. It sounds like you're into some pretty cool stuff.
I know a lot of really talented people, and they let me tag along with them.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was good.
So, yeah, I'll have to link that up in the show notes so that people can check it out. I'm assuming he's got a website.
Yeah.
And
the lifersproject.com.
Okay, yep. Awesome. I'll have to check that out myself.
Yeah.
It sounds really, really stunning.
Yeah, you'll see all the videos and stuff, and it'll make a ton of sense, I think, when you watch a few of the episodes. Like, all four, it's broken up into 4 weeks of every week. Mm-hmm. We were in Seattle, then we were in Portland, then we were in San Francisco, then we were in L.A. So I think it'll, when you see it all, it'll all make sense.
yeah. Well, I can't wait. So I want to back up a little and just sort of go back to the beginning.
Okay.
So at what point did the idea of giving up a permanent address, like, I'm not even sure, like, do you own a house somewhere?
Not anymore.
Okay. Not anymore. All right. So when did that idea first start to take form for you?
Wow. I guess when it really started to really get in my mind was just the feeling I started to have being in the city and just being in a place and just wanting to live simpler. Then I started to travel a little bit, and I went to Nicaragua for about a month. And while I was there, I saw, you know, three generations of a family living in a house with no front door. But they had a satellite dish on their roof. And I was like, where are people's priorities in this world, you know, and what's the deal and that sort of thing. And I think when I came back to the States, you know, I was finding it a little tough to kind of reintegrate the way that I left. And I was talking to a good friend of mine, and he said, you know, man, I think you should maybe give this Airstream life a try. You've been talking about it, and I think you should do it. And it was at that point where I just got, I felt like I went all in. Kind of at that point, I was like, yeah, I should do that. And it, I don't know, it just from there, the ball started rolling downhill to set up to live this lifestyle. I started looking for Airstreams every day, spending the majority of my time, like, actually looking for trailers. And keep in mind, at this time, I didn't even own a car. I didn't even own a car at all. I was riding a bike through Denver for almost 4 years, full time. I didn't even, you know, really know anything except I have to get a trailer. This is going to work out somehow. Let's, you know, just start this off and the universe will provide, I guess. So, funny enough, I found the trailer way before I found my truck to actually pull it anywhere. I knew that's how it was going to happen. It didn't matter what the order was. It was just, you know, you gotta get both sooner or later to make this happen. And so it took the better part of, I guess, 6 or 7 months before I had both and I was ready to hit the road.
Okay. Well, a lot of the people that I work with within Pure Green, they have that sort of same story where they go for a simpler life or they yearn for that. But most of the time it manifests in a farm or
right.
a cabin in the woods, right?
Right.
Yeah. But you had sort of an aversion to staying in one place then. It sounds like you wanted to explore more as part of that same urge.
Yeah, I think they kind of started to go hand in hand. It was like, you know, how can I, you know, I guess I didn't want to trade one for the other. I didn't want to move out of a house in the city to just move out to a place in the country. I really wanted to get out and see, you know, what this great country I live in, you know, looks like mm-hmm. and what other countries look like. You know, I had just come back from a bunch of traveling and I really just had the bug to keep going. And yeah. I guess, you know, the real thing that struck me about the Airstream lifestyle was the idea that I could pick up and go and that home is where you park it. That's one of my mm-hmm. favorite things that I think strikes me every day, that home is where you park it. So I got comfortable with the idea that I was going to have the trailer and that, you know, if I made that comfortable, it didn't matter where I was going to be. And that it's really held true. You know, I pulled over and stayed in some pretty questionable spots, but because I was, you know, I had the trailer and I had things, kind of resources, the right resources that any place feels, can feel pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, you're sort of, well, all the things that you value are with you all the time.
Yep.
And you have that one constant for sure.
Yeah.
So why an Airstream specifically? I mean, it sounds like that was a pretty sure thing that you wanted from the get-go. So why? Why is that?
I think there's something really timeless about the Airstream trailers. Mm-hmm. You know, they look so good. I mean, the design of the Airstream, you know, is something that really speaks to me because I like modern design. I like simple. I like classic. You know, I guess really timeless. I probably hit it with the word timeless. I like things that, you know, are going to stand the test of time. And I think the Airstream trailer has that. The other reason is because I like efficiency. I like things to work really well. I like technology. Again, I think, you know, in a lot of respects, technology betters our lives if used in the right way. And I think the Airstream kind of marries all those elements for me, where other travel trailers or other tiny homes or anything like that really doesn't offer all those components. They might offer a little bit. They might offer, you know, some that are better, but I don't think so. I think the Airstream really embodies all that I need as a modern, you know, traveler, modern nomad, you know. I want everything that it offers. And I've been in tons of other trailers and tons of other, like I said, like tiny homes and things like that. And they're great, but they can't take those where I take the Airstream. I mean, I take the Airstream to some really questionable spots and it performs, you know what I mean? It goes there and it can withstand, the elements, which is a big thing when you, are traveling and living like this, is you're going to wind up in some spots that you can't control the outcome. And, you know, you have to be sure of your equipment, I guess. So.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So you mean like rugged landscapes?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. So,
yeah, rough roads and things like that?
Yeah. Like some of the places, you know, going, you know, 5 miles up a forest road to you know, a seriously bumpy road, only to have to go down this single lane piece of, you know, track that you can only go 5 miles on, and, you know, and whatnot. I mean, you're just not going to take a lot of fifth wheel trailers there very easy, or they're not going to hold up. They're going to rattle apart at the end of the day when you've taken them on too many of those.
Okay.
And the Airstream is just built to withstand a lot of that, which I'm,
yeah.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
It's something I hadn't thought of.
Yeah.
So I think most often you associate Airstream with being vintage.
Right.
Do they make them still, or are they all vintage? That's why they're so hard to find.
Yeah. I get that question a lot. Yeah. I get that question a ton. So yes, they make Airstreams right now today. And I think if you'd probably ask Airstream Corporation, they'd probably tell you that there's more demand for them than ever before in their history.
Wow.
They can't make them fast enough is the word on the grapevine that I've heard. Yeah, but you know, they and it's very funny to be in the trailer culture that I've been and compare a 1960 to mine, which is a 2005, and really compare the bones and see that they had the process down when they started, and they're just improving on it over the years. And that there's certain things about them that still haven't even really changed, you know, because it was good from the get-go, and what was good then still is good now.
Yeah, that's like, I mean, so much of classic design is like that.
Yeah.
And that's a really interesting observation that I hadn't really considered before, but it's, I mean, I've actually never been in an Airstream. I've seen them, obviously. We all know what they look like, but I've never been in one. But when I was younger, my family did own a trailer that my parents bought specifically to drive mostly through Quebec, because my family is from there.
Okay.
So we spent, like, you know, 2 weeks every summer for maybe 5 years. Drove to Florida.
Okay. There you go.
Did things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know a little bit about what it's like to live in one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the Airstream specifically, I've never been in one. So,
that.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. So what did you have to do anything to your Airstream? Cause I know that, you wanted to make an effort to travel sustainably. So what were some of the amendments that you had to make, or the considerations that you had to make before you started this process?
I think, yeah, I mean, that was definitely my focus for the whole kind of setup from my truck down to the Airstream. And I think, like with the Airstream, it was really going to depend on which one kind of presented itself, and the one that we wound up getting didn't need a lot of interior work, as some of them did. We were lucky enough to get one that was already molded plywood and, you know, a lot of the things that I was looking for aesthetically. But one of the things we wanted to do was right away upgrade our solar our solar farm and really make the trailer be able to go and live off the grid. It's still one of the drivers that makes me live this lifestyle very efficiently. So I added a few batteries to the battery farm and changed out all the lights to LEDs, there's 33 lights. It took them from burning 20 watts to burning 2 watts. So
wow.
It was a major change to, I guess, you know, just not only the amount of power we were generating, but how you were using that power, wielding that very carefully. So a lot of upgrades like that to how the power was going to be used. From there, you know, there was various other like electrical things that had to be done just to kind of set that up to work better, which I'm so thankful because I can really get off the grid because of that. So living out, 2 weeks anywhere is not even a problem, even when I have a lot of work to do or, you know, charging the phone or the iPad or playing music or whatever the case may be, I always have enough power for me and friends or whatever the case may be without using a generator or burning any other fossil fuels. I'm using this renewable resource. So that was really important.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else was just kind of, kind of general stuff. I mean, we reupholstered everything in wool so that it was, you know, naturally antimicrobial, that it was very easy to clean, that, again, it was timeless, added the right aesthetic to the lifestyle and to the interior, and just, you know, put something in there that was going to last, unlike, what sometimes gets put in these is a little bit more of an afterthought, or they're going for fashion over function. I decided I wanted both. That was the goal there with the Pendleton wool and really doing that. So
of course I've seen some pictures through the photos that we shot for the magazine. I mean, it looks really, really cute. Yeah. And how big is it?
It's a 28 foot, Airstream International CCD model.
Okay. So you mentioned that you were able to spend about 2 weeks out sort of in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
But what do you do but water?
So what's cool is the Airstream has an onboard 40-gallon fresh water tank. And basically, so you're filling that thing up. And then I installed a 10-stage water filter that goes down to 1 micron. So you can filter even pretty cruddy water into really nice drinking water. So if you have to fill it up on the fly or do whatever you need to do. So carrying a few extra water containers is always very important. And, you know, if you have to run into town and do that. But what's cool is you can come back and you can kind of fill that tank up. The whole idea has always been to how can I conserve what I'm doing. And, being able to last, say, you know, 2 people could even last like 7 to almost 10 days on 40 gallons of water, where your average person in a house is burning 85 to 110 gallons a day.
Wow. Okay. So, well, yeah, that's okay. That's a pretty crazy number.
Yep.
It doesn't surprise me at all. But what I'm curious about is, what are some of the things that you're doing to reduce how much water you're using?
I think a lot of it is just management. So maybe you're taking a military shower instead of letting the water run, or even the simple one that I think there's a bunch of good causes going around right now, which is just brushing your teeth and how you can do that and really save water. I mean, I can see the effects of that. Just in what I told you, and lasting that long on water when you can see it in the sink, you know, I'll still do a thing right now where I'll close my drain in my bathroom sink just to prove to myself how little water I need to kind of use to do that activity. So I think it's in that visible management that you start to get so aware that it starts to snowball into every aspect of what you're doing, whether it's how you're washing your dishes, you know, how much water you're putting in a cup to drink and making sure that you drink it all, or if you don't drink it all, that the rest of it goes in the dog bowl, you know, or whatever the case may be, just to maintain that finite resource and really stretch it out in a way that's more efficient than so many people take for granted, that every time they just twist on the faucet that there's going to be water there, because that's not always going to be the case.
No, absolutely. Well, I mean, I love that. That is so awesome. And I mean, I have to say, living in Canada, I think that the majority of the people who live here, myself included, I'm lucky enough to live on the shores of a lake, and I look at it all day, every day.
Right.
You know, and so water is in abundance. Yesterday, it rained 16 inches, I think. I don't know. It rained a lot yesterday. It was an insane, like a deluge. And so, must not be in, anyway, whatever. It rained a lot.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think so many people just get really out of tune with how much water they're using. But I mean, myself, I'm so guilty of it. Even being a really ecologically minded person, I think that's probably my worst habit, is like leaving glasses of water around the house, or, you know, indulging in longer showers or whatever it is. I mean, it's just so hard. So I think that's really awesome. And those are probably habits that you'll hopefully carry with you throughout your life.
Yeah, I think you said it, though. I mean, I think it's just being conscious of it. The fact that you even see it for yourself, I mean, that's the first step, is acknowledging, oh, wow, there's a half a glass of water there. What am I going to do with it? And even noticing that, you're already making change. It's where I think a lot of people haven't noticed that part yet, so it hasn't affected them. You know, and it will. It just takes a couple of things, and all of a sudden it sticks with you. And I think you're right. I mean, for me to get off this lifestyle right now would really mean that I went into a structure where I was more in charge of my resources than how I was living in Denver before this, because I felt very out of touch with the resources, because you could just do it all, and you know, it didn't feel like it mattered very much. You heard all these problems in the world, but what can you do? What can you do? And now I actually feel like I'm doing something, because I want to be part of the solution, not more of the problem. And I think the coolest thing about getting to do what I do is how many people I get to talk to and get to interact with and are very interested in the trailer. It gives me an ample platform to discuss these practices and, you know, my use of solar, my use of water management, the propane that I, you know, just all these resources that I'm in charge of, and trying to send the people away with that message that, hey, you don't have to go home and invest $10,000 in a solar farm on your house. Go home and buy one Goal Zero panel and a little thing and charge your iPad, your phone, and your computer, and you've made a difference. You can make a difference right now today just by doing that one thing and pulling a little less power. If 20 people did that, I mean, it there really is something to be said for making that small of a change. It'll make a
difference. Yeah. I love that that's become such a big part of what you're doing.
Yeah.
I think if it was maybe not the main motivator in the beginning, I think that it's incredible that it's sort of taken this direction. Yeah, so I totally love that. So how many kilowatts do you have? Like, sorry, that's a geeky question, but it's like 1 kilowatt or?
No, I mean, it's kind of that's kind of a tough thing to kind of measure out there. I've been it's funny because all the different systems are a little bit different the way they measure the kilowatts to the amps that are being generated.
Oh, right.
So I'll try to give you a comparison. So basically, like my solar setup will pull down in full sun, basically like 8 amps. Okay, so 8 amps pulling down is going to be equal, I think, to like that would be almost like 8,000 kilowatts when it's pulling down. So I think it's like to 1,000, you know, it's to like 1,000 when you talk kilowatts versus amps.
Okay.
But I'll tell you what my setup is, which is, you know, I have two 100-watt solar panels pulling down into a 4 deep cell marine batteries running in 12-volt parallel. So
okay.
It's basically 2 batteries wired together making 1 12-volt, and then another set of that exact thing basically kind of stacking on top of each other. And then mm-hmm. I have a 1,750-watt power inverter that actually turns that that DC current into AC current so it can run the trailer.
Yeah.
So that's kind of it. But my gauge, what it's pulling down, is basically showing in amp hours. So mm-hmm. in full sun spectrum, I think it was up the other day to like 8.6 or something. And even in cloud cover, I'm still pulling down like 3 to 4 amps. So we were just in the Northwest, and even while it was raining, I was pulling down an amp or two, and my batteries were getting charged. So It was really fun to watch that happen. It was just a real kick to see, like, look, I'm still pulling down some stuff here, even in this what you would consider no sun. The power is still there, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's incredible. Yep. We have in our backyard, we have a 10-kilowatt solar system, which is pretty big.
Yeah.
I mean, that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I forget how many panels, but it's big. It's like, yeah, it's on the stand. It's, yeah. Anyway, it's a very big operation, but
yeah.
It's kind of, yeah, it's neat.
It's awesome. So, it's the funnest thing, right? Like, you just get such a kick. You're like, oh my, look at this abundant resource above us. And, you know, you just needed these pieces of hardware, and it's done. It's clean. It's beautiful. It's, you know, and you know, you're almost like, I could just leave all the lights on if I want. But because you've taken the time to actually understand generating that power, it's the last thing you ever want to do is even waste any of it. So mm-hmm. I find myself more than ever not turning things on when I don't need to, or making sure that everything's off, because I don't, you know, I feel like it's so precious, even though it's so abundant.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Now with ours, we don't actually use the energy ourselves. It's part of the way the hydro is sort of structured here. We actually feed the grid with it, so we're paid for the energy that we put in, and then it kind of goes out, and then it flows back in into our meter.
That's
even
better, because you're doing for your community. You're doing an absolute community service.
Ours is about enough to power 3 houses, I think, something like that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I love
it. So, it's good. It was an adventure setting that up, but it's really good. I'm so happy we did it.
Yeah.
And so what about fuel? I know that you do something special for that. So, for those who've read the magazine, they will have sort of gotten a little bit of background on that. But, we have a lot of new listeners on the podcast too. So I'd love for you to explain how you tackle that, because covering that kind of mileage, all of that, I mean, how do you handle that portion of it?
Yeah. I guess this kind of goes back to to a lot of the reason I didn't own a car before, and mm-hmm. Wanted to kind of reduce my footprint. Starting out on this lifestyle, I knew if I was going to do it, obviously I was going to be driving a lot. And part of that decision making kind of came to this realization point was, I can't do this if I'm just going to be burning more gas. And, and towing a trailer, you obviously get less gas mileage, and having a truck like I do, I knew right away I couldn't just go, I couldn't just go the normal route. So what I did was did a lot of research about running a diesel vehicle on waste vegetable oil. And the diesel engine was actually made and invented by Rudolf Diesel to free the farmers and actually run on peanut oil when the engine was invented. But unfortunately, people had other things in mind, and they didn't let that happen, so the idea of running it kind of went away. But it doesn't change the fact that that's how it functions. So what I did was I basically created a veggie oil vehicle. So I have a big Dodge Ram 2500 Cummins diesel, and that has a auxiliary fuel system that I burn waste vegetable oil through.
Okay. That That's really interesting. I didn't know that about the origins of the diesel engine. But, okay, so then the obvious question is, where do you get fuel?
Well, there are a fair amount of people. It's a small group. It's definitely, you know, picking up steam. But there's a fair amount of people doing, biodiesel co-ops throughout the country. And other people that are, you know, that are doing this a little bit more underground. And it just, a lot of networking is really what it comes down to. There isn't a lot of places that you can just pull up to and, you know, start pumping veggie oil in your truck in the capacity that I need it as well, like how far I drive and that sort of thing. So it requires a little bit of networking, but it's all very possible. And the movement as far as biodiesel, we're a little behind here in North America, I would say, compared to somebody like Brazil, who has an absolute choice at the pump of what they're selling. It's not just gas and it's not just diesel. They're actually independent of importing fuel. They import no fuel into their country anymore.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they're making it all themselves. So they make a great biodiesel. They also make methanol and ethanol from sugar beets. So it's a it's a renewable resource that's abundant. And I watched a documentary recently called Pump. I highly recommend watching it. It's amazing. And there's a comment in there that says, you know, what's the best crop to grow biodiesel or grow methanol or ethanol? And they said, whichever one grows best in your area.
Wow.
There isn't a best crop. It's just, you can almost make it out of anything. So, you know, I look forward to more things like that catching on and everybody having a choice and doing a little bit of everything to, you know, offset what we're doing to this planet.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, absolutely. I mean, here in Canada, I think a few stations, I'm sure of all of them, but some of the bigger, I don't know, companies, brands, whatever, they have up to 10%, I think, just as standard ethanol, so it's mixed.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it says.
Yep.
Who knows in actuality, but yeah, still a long way to go for sure. But so then, okay, so you said that you have an auxiliary system, so you can still buy diesel if you have to.
So I always, this is the thing about running this and where people have maybe failed with biodiesel or something in the past is that I have a dual tank system. So I have the 35-gallon regular diesel tank, and then I have a 70-gallon waste vegetable oil tank. And basically, you are starting the engine on diesel and stopping the engine on diesel. It's when you are up and running that you flip on the fuel pump and flip over to the veggie oil. And the only thing that you notice is that the gas pedal feels smoother. The engine's running better on the vegetable oil than it is on the regular diesel.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I'm curious.
That's what you feel. And most people have, other than that, have no idea. There's a little bit of French fry smell, as everybody kind of knows. But it's not anything. The real things that you notice is there's nothing coming out of the tailpipe anymore. There's no, it's basically a carbon negative kind of situation. There's no black smoke or anything coming out of the tailpipe. It's very, very clean. So it's the difference between if you burn gas and you burn, say, ethanol, the ethanol is very clean and the gas is off-putting this black smoke. So you could see it in a lab experiment. Any child in sixth grade right now could probably, you know, comment on that and say, yeah, I saw it happen in the lab in school, you know. But I think that it probably fails to transcend sometimes because, you know, we're so used to it in driving around that we just see, you know, these tailpipes emitting so much stuff. So it's cool with that, you know, people start to notice, whoa, there's no black smoke anymore. Or there's, you know, just this little smell. Or are we really running on vegetable oil right now? Yes, we have a half hour, you know. Other than that, you really don't notice anything other than you're not stopping as often for anything because of the fuel capacity that I've installed in this thing. So
Okay, so yeah, how far can you go on one tank?
Pretty far. Pretty far. I guess being on the project I was just on, the other vehicles were needing to stop every 350 miles for fuel, and I went 1,500 before I needed anything.
Wow. Okay. So is that just because you have an insanely big tank or because the mileage is better or both?
A little bit of both. I got to really, hand it to the diesel vehicles for being able to increase the mileage, which, I wish we could see on all vehicles. But, even towing my giant trailer, I get really good gas mileage. And then when I'm not towing and I'm going on an adventure, I get even better. So I think it's a combination of how much fuel I actually can carry and how efficient I am at driving. I'm a pretty safe driver and keep it at the speed limit and don't, gas it too hard or anything like that. So I'm real conscious about, again, how I'm burning my resources and trying to make them last and get as much out of them as I can.
Mm-hmm. Wow, it's so fascinating to me. So you said that you network, and so what does that mean? Like, how do you, if someone wanted to do this, how would they do it?
Yeah, I would say, using one of our best resources of our time, the good old internet, does provide through various, a few different forums and Craigslist and, finding where these people are trying to make a change in their community. Okay. I've linked up with a couple of really great people as far out as Bozeman, Montana would be a really good example of somebody trying to do it, in a way that I see. I mean, just so right. And running a biodiesel co-op in the way that they are, I hooked up with this guy up there. His name's Jesse, and he runs Full Circle Biofuels, and he has this great little setup. He's a chemical engineer, I think he said, and he has a great setup where he's processing the vegetable oil that he gets from the local restaurants in the college, and he's turning it into biodiesel or for what I'm using, which is just the straight waste vegetable oil, and taking these waste products and making them into these wonderful fuels to run school buses and, fleets of trucks and, just all these things, or people like me who are traveling and want to make a little bit of a difference and less of an impact. So it's just searching people out like that that has made this all work. And really just that you can see another way that we can do things.
Yeah. Oh, so inspiring. So my last question on on this,
yep.
And then I'll move on. But is it like similar in cost?
It's actually a lot cheaper.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's actually a lot cheaper because it's a waste product and you're not doing too much to it. Biodiesel costs, I would say it costs a little less than gas. Like if you were to go to, say, a place here in California, there's a fair amount of pumps here and stations here in California that offer, your gasoline, your diesel, and then they offer a straight up biodiesel that's even up to like B99 or something like that. And it's comparable. It's definitely always going to be a little cheaper than gas. But at the end of the day, you get so much more out of it when you know that you're burning a waste product that normally, has to be disposed of. So, yeah, but it can definitely be a lot cheaper in the long run, if you're driving as much as I am. So,
yeah. Oh, fascinating. Okay. So I know that probably when people first meet you or they follow you on social or whatever, the question that runs through their mind is how, like, I'm so jealous, man. How do you do this?
Yeah.
So like, I mean, your life is beautiful and so inspiring. So how could someone achieve a life like yours? I mean, what would you say to the average person who's interested in this kind of lifestyle?
Don't wait. Just do it. Try to figure out a way. I appreciate you saying all those kind things. You know, I definitely try not to let myself even take this lifestyle for granted for even one day, because I feel so blessed to be able to do it, that I was actually able to make it happen. You know, I feel lucky because my work allows me to do it, you know, that I can truly work from anywhere. So, but I feel like a lot of people have that, right now. They, you know, in the world that we live in, so much, you know, working from home or working satellite style allows this lifestyle to be a possibility. Not, I know it's not for everybody or not everybody can do it, but, you know, a lot of what I tell people, to be honest, I'm like, I just wish I would have done this sooner. And a lot of the people that I run into, a lot of retirees out, you know, that are traveling this lifestyle or living in the RV, and, you know, they're like, you're a little young to be doing this. And I'm like, well, I want to do it now. You know, I want to be living like this. I didn't want to wait, you know, I didn't want to wait and do this. I thought that, you know, this lifestyle change meant more to me than just seeing the sights, that I did want to make a change. I do have all these, you know, I guess kind of like all this eco mentality that I want to put into practice right now. And that's, I guess, what I tell people. I'm like, you know, whether it's go home and get a solar panel today, or go on that camping trip that you keep talking about, or you just told me you work a 70-hour-a-week job that you hate, and how much, you know, how much is your body paying for that paycheck? You know, you're being owned by your things or this and that. And I've already met a couple of people that reconnected with me, and they said, I quit the job and I'm getting a trailer and I'm out, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's pretty inspiring for me to hear that, is that, that just maybe I, you know, just clip the very last thread that they needed someone to say, look, this is totally doable. Like, do it. You're going to get so much out of it. And so I think I try to lend that to the conversations when I'm asked that question, is, you know, how do I do it? What do I do? And it's just, man, just start small, and it's going to snowball.
Yeah. Now, oh gosh. I mean, it's funny because since we've never met, but, you know, been exposed to you through the magazine and gotten to know you a little bit. It's funny because I keep saying to Jonathan, like, would you ever want to do that? Because I would.
Right.
You know, and he's kind of like, yeah. But, so we're in a bit of a different situation, though. I mean, like, we have one child, she's two. So do you see this as being equally doable if people are, you know, at that stage where they have a family and it's not just them?
Yes, I do. One of the most inspiring families that kind of got me on this lifestyle, that I got to meet very early on at my very first Airstream rally before I had an Airstream, is their Instagram handle is Malamish. And it's this couple, Dan and Marlene, and they have three amazing children, and they're living in an Airstream that I think is a foot smaller than mine.
Wow.
And a family of five, and they have been doing it a lot longer than I have, and they are pros at it, especially with the tribe that they have. But I would tell you that not only can they do it, but they are doing it so well and enriching their children's lives, and in turn enriching their lives, I think, in the experiences they're having. Because, you know, the little girls and the little fella, they're all enrolled in the Junior Ranger badge program. And so they're trying to see every national park, and they're learning so much about, you know, the ecosystem and wildlife and, you know, just how lucky we are to be on this planet at this time. And I would say that they're my example of, can a family do it? Every time I try to steer some people over to them. There's a couple other people, R Open Road, you know, these folks are traveling in a van, a Westafalia, all the way to the tip of Patagonia is where they went to. They went all the way to Chile, and, you know, through many, many countries with two little kids and absolute adventure, living life to the fullest and, you know, enriching all their lives through it. It's really impressive. It's inspiring. every time I see an Instagram from one of those guys, I mean, my heart just fills up, and I'm very lucky to, I feel very lucky to get to see that happening and see the other side of it. So
yeah. Sounds amazing. I mean, that's kind of how I look at it too. I can only imagine that you are exposing your kids to so much.
Yeah.
I mean, how can they not benefit from that,
right?
And I also love that because you're living in such a small space, it's also sort of opening your eyes a bit to consumerism too.
Right.
Like, you have to watch what you bring in because that item takes up space, right? So it's
right. Yeah, I have kind of a one in, one out rule.
Yeah,
it's been funny to kind of do that. It's been funny to be on that program. You know, for so long I was like, even when I was in the city, I've been very blessed with the lifestyle I've gotten to lead, where I've had a lot of support from companies and things like that. And I would always, you know, when I got something, I would always be like, all right, what am I going to get rid of now? And I would make a kind of like a homeless bag and make a little bag with a t-shirt and a pair of pants or a pair of shoes and make a little bag and keep them in my car and just give them away to homeless people that I saw, just to get rid of and kind of pass on the good fortune that I've been willing to take. But in the Airstream, I literally have to have a one in, one out rule, even with like t-shirts and anything that I get. So one of the companies that supports me, Brixton, they just sent me an amazing box of goodies. And, you know, when I opened it up, I was like, oh my God, this stuff's so awesome. Uh-oh, what am I going to get rid of? You know, do a little cleaning to make room for this stuff. And, you know, it's a good problem to have. And I like that it helps me be aware and also keep passing on the good fortune that I'm able to receive from the support I get from companies and stuff. So,
yeah, well, that's what a beautiful way of dealing with that problem. Yeah, that's really nice.
Yeah.
So you have companies then that sponsor you on your travels?
Yeah, I definitely do. One of the main ones is Topo Designs, who, it's one of my friend's companies in Denver. They're just an amazing company that is Colorado made, Colorado founded. And, again, they make just bulletproof product for my lifestyle, which from the Salomon shoes that are amazing trail runners to all the bags that they supply me with that, you know, allow me to go out and rock hunt or, you know, carry my stuff from one place to the other, or get my skateboard to the skate park every day. You know, they really do a good job by me. And then a company like Brixton, who supplies me with hats and apparel and stuff. I mean, I'm just very, very blessed to receive some help from people. So,
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So my last couple of questions, how long have you been on the road now total?
It is about 2.5 years right now.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
And you have no home base now any longer. You sold your house,
yep.
But you must have family. Do they live in Denver?
I have good friends and family in Denver. I have kind of family that's kind of all scattered all over, Ohio, Florida, and Wisconsin. So they're kind of everywhere. It gives me a reason to go travel to those places too, which is really cool. But yeah, I would say if I have a real home base still, it's definitely Colorado. I mean, of all the places I've been, it's still my favorite spot in the country, almost the world. It's so good to me there. And I've made relationships that'll last me the rest of my life for sure there. So,
yeah. Okay. So then my last question then is this something that's indefinite for you? Like, do you have a 5-year plan or whatever? Like, what do you see yourself doing?
I got to tell you, I've never been the 5-year plan guy.
No, me neither.
Had a 5-year plan up. So I think for me, and it's funny, it's because that's what some people start to get to know me through a conversation. And about 10 minutes later, they ask, where to next? I don't even have a clue, to be totally honest with you. So I think right now I don't see an end to the journey because I'm still loving it every single day. I get tickled every day when I wake up in the airstream. I'm just like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm still here. you know, and I get to do this wherever I'm at. And so I really don't see an end to it. But with that in mind, I mean, I could easily pull the plug 3 months from now and be really, really happy that I got to do this for as long as I did. But right now I don't see that happening. I see myself wanting to keep going. I see myself wanting to explore more and meet more people and do great things, you know, that I know those adventures are out there. And I guess the road always calls me in a certain direction, and that's where I go to next. I don't really have a big plan in mind. The only thing I have kind of looming out there is that I'm headed up to San Francisco the first week of August for the Lifers Project Art Show that'll be happening up there for the month that I just got off of traveling with that project.
Yeah. Okay. So, wow. I mean, the freedom, my goodness. So, but you don't find that, you know, like all the driving and all that, like it never gets tiresome or you're never lonely?
I guess the driving part is very funny because, for whatever reason, I now find the driving pretty meditative, you know, from going from not driving very much or at all to now driving, you know, huge stints or all day sometimes. I find it kind of meditative and somewhat uplifting. You know, there's times for sure where you're like, all I want to do is park, pull over, you know, have a campfire and get something to eat, and I can't wait to lay down. But, you know, I think the adventure really is the journey, and the driving just seems to be part of it. You know, I really like seeing all the places and, you know, what you get to drive by and what you had to go through to get there. I think it makes it that much sweeter a lot of times, and places have seemed greener or the sky seems bluer just because I had to travel that much further to get there. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it sounds like you meet lots and lots of people along the way. So, you know, that it doesn't sound like it's a lonely sort of thing at all.
I guess it can be. You know, I started off obviously traveling with Taryn, and you know, I miss her a bunch. I miss having someone there, and I would love it if she still wanted to travel like this. But it, you know, everybody gets called out of it at a different time, and I guess, you know, for me, I've learned to deal with kind of like that loneliness, I guess, in a different way. And I've just channeled it into, it's part of my personal growth. And it started to kind of like wash off a little bit where I am a little bit more, I can entertain myself, or I can deal with that loneliness in kind of a different way. And I'm fulfilled with my surroundings as much, and, or being able to go inside deeper and kind of like work on myself through that loneliness. I just look at it as another challenge and another kind of like road on the journey of my personal life and my personal growth.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, this has been one super inspiring conversation. Thank you so much, Brandon. I really, really appreciate all the time that you've taken.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
So that concludes my talk with Brandon. Are you feeling inspired to expand your horizons in a whole new way? I sure am. I've already been asking my husband, Jonathan, if he could ever see himself doing this. And who knows, maybe we will. As always, we've prepared show notes for you over at puregreenmag.com/podcast/Brandon. You can find links to some of the things and people we talk about there. Also, if you don't have one yet, get a copy of Volume 8 to read a beautifully photographed and written article about Brandon and get inside his Airstream. Use the code PODCAST29 to get 10% off that issue. And we've been running a series on the website for a while now with Brandon where he sends us postcards from the road. They're beautiful and will leave you wanting more. In fact, there's one up on the site right now. We'll link those up in the show notes as well. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review over on iTunes for us. And if you'd like to strike up a conversation with us about this episode, you can do that over on Facebook at facebook.com/puregreenmag. Also, follow Brandon's adventures on his Instagram account, Spacetime Time Space. Thank you so very much for listening. I'm Celine McKay, and this is the Pure Green Podcast.